Testing one, testing two, buckle my boot, buckle my shoe. Love it. Go ahead, Alan.
This is Master Alan Venable of the Saber Martial Arts Podcast, looking at a Saber Martial Arts holo education outreach program thing here.
My favorite part was a thing here.
Yeah.
And with a thing here, welcome to SMAFcast. This will be episode, I believe, 28. And if you haven't caught up, go out now, hit pause and go to YouTube, go to Apple Podcasts, go to Spotify, go to Stitcher, go to Podbean, I don't care, go to your mom's house and get her laptop and listen to SMAFcast episode 27, wherein we took a look at Alan's Phoenix Saber Academy curriculum, or I should say snippets from Alan's Phoenix Saber Academy curriculum, because truly just snippets, but you get a whole lot more than snippets in analysis and commentary on the content. So it's kind of nice to hear from the person who generated the system themselves, and also from some mook who's just watching, aka myself, and to just kind of get a little scope into maybe some similarities with your own saber training. Maybe if you've never trained before, this would be a nice way to dip your toe into the pool. And so anyway, there's a companion playlist with that. So go check that out. And either way, that companion playlist is unlisted on YouTube. So the only way to watch that content right now, is to go ahead and listen to the podcast. It's in the show description, a link to that playlist. And I really had fun with that episode. So tonight, that's kind of what we're doing.
I had fun too.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool.
And Alan,
look forward to this.
Yeah, me too, because one particular reason, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this before we start this episode, is really quickly, what was it like to get I know you've done this before because you've been a teacher for a long time, but what was it like to get your stuff sort of analyzed and or I didn't really pick it apart, but picked apart for a better terminology by somebody who had never done it before with you, had never done your system before, didn't even really know much about it other than sort of the little bits of conversation we've had over the years?
Well, with everything, you have to take all criticism and kind of go back and look at it from every point of view. It's not necessarily healthy to just be like, oh, well, that guy thought my stuff was crap. He's wrong.
Yeah.
Right. That is an incorrect way of processing criticism. You listen to it, and then you just you do just like if somebody throws a punch. You know, what you have trained is what's going to show up. You know, you're going to go and say, okay, well, there are some things that I really liked and there are some things that I really didn't like. Mm-hmm. And you have to stop. Like, if you were to be a professional athlete and you watch your videos, you're not going to be like, oh, well, obviously whatever my coach said was wrong that I did wrong because I still did it. No, they're trying to help you and trying to make you grow as a person and grow as a, you know, as an athlete. So all kinds of criticism for me is good, because that,
and I wasn't even really critical. I don't think I criticized the thing, but your point is still made.
Yeah, it's meant to be
critical thought, critical eye.
It's meant to be like, okay, well, this is a thing and this is my interpretation of it. What do you think?
Yeah.
And if there is, you know, and here's my caveat to that. If you don't have further credentials, right? Like, you're not really, and this is for all things. Like, you can have an opinion about art. You can have an opinion about, you know, movies and TV shows and however you want. That's all. That's your interpretation of art. You can hate it or you can love it. You can, you know, go anywhere in between. So that's kind of how I see martial arts, especially when it's presented. It's like your opinion is valid because that's your opinion. It's when somebody starts to make it like a personal thing or try to make it like, well, that's not going to ever work. Like, right. Well, in this particular case, it will.
And but, I've been accused of that myself. Sorry to interject, but I do feel it's important just really quickly to say, I've been that guy. This won't work. Yeah. This is BS. Yeah. I've been that guy, and I will be that guy again, I'm sure. But again, your point is well made that it's maybe not the healthiest.
Right. Yeah, it's not healthy to for either person, right? For the person being criticized and the critic. Both, again, opinions are valid when it comes to art because it's an opinion. But when it becomes something where one person tries to be more righteous than the other, or when one person becomes more, you know, I'm right because of XYZ.
Right.
It's like, great, man, that's your opinion, and you're valid, and that's awesome. However, that's not what I'm talking about. That's not what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times stuff like that, you do have to take as a grain of salt. The fact that somebody's willing to put their art out there, first of all, is braver than any other thing that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, because they know it's going to be ripped apart. They know it's going to be, you know,
it's very vulnerable.
Criticized.
I'm glad you said that. It's very vulnerable. And it's important for me to remember, because when I am that guy who's either tearing stuff apart or maybe getting torn apart, it's just really important to remember that doing that in the first place took a large sack of toys, so to speak. And,
right.
You know, now, that's worth its weight.
Right. Now, you and I are both professional martial arts instructors. So when we look at something and we call Bushido, right, our fun little thing, where it's just like, no, that is just messed up, because because we actually see that people would get hurt if they try to practice that.
Yes, yes.
It's not because you know, we like that person personally or not. It's just like, no, you know, you know, across the room, chi strike is not going to work.
Right.
And obviously it's not going to work, because look at this guy that just showed up at one of your events.
Well, let me just
up to you.
Unpack 30 plus years of martial arts practice out and just give you a few ideas why it might not. And you're still welcome to refute that. That's the thing. Like for you and me, I think the conversation is the allure. Like, I don't think you or I are the type of martial artists that want other martial arts to suck. Right?
Like, exactly.
I want everybody's martial art to be awesome, because that means I get to learn it. And so for me, like, I don't want anybody's stuff to suck. So when there is a critical thing happening, you know, I do like to try and look at it from all angles, maybe try and glean something useful from something that is bullshito, but you know, It like you said, the vulnerability is, boy, it's both ways too. Cause I know I've had to put my foot in my mouth a few times when being critical, because there's a vulnerability to that too. Because what if you actually are wrong? Which has happened. It happens all the time. Right. And so my foot ends up in my mouth and I go, you know what? I just learned something. And the good thing to do is to go to that martial artist that you learned that thing that you maybe criticized before and say, you know what? You were right. I was wrong. Oh, how cool is that? How much do other martial artists like that too? Like,
well, that just shows an amount of integrity, right? And a lot of this stuff from this is, you know, where we're talking about being critical. And the thing is, like, if you understand what kind of training somebody has gone through and everything like that, you start to go, okay, that might be the way that, just pick a martial art out there, Jeet Kune Do thinks of it.
Sure, yeah.
Right? But in Bagua, we look at it like this. Okay, in Tai Chi, we look at it like this. And like, when you watch, like, for example, well, let me put it in a somewhat more contemporary thing. The new show Shogun, the one of the main characters, Toranaga, is basically like, no, don't kill don't kill the foreigner. We got to learn from him. Right? He's like, he's important because we need to figure this out. You know, there's new technology and stuff like that.
Right.
And spoilers for those of you who don't haven't seen the show yet, but he brings cannons to Japan and basically says, this is how they work. And it just becomes this whole thing where it's just like, now who has the, you know, the most technological advance.
Yeah.
But even then, like the other samurai are like, I can fire faster and more accurately mm-hmm. with my bow and arrow than your clunky cannon can be loaded.
As an
and
archer,
shot.
And I say that with a grain of salt, by the way. I'm no Levi mm-hmm. Morgan or anybody like that. But as an archer, I value that sentiment.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is that they're both right.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
The cannons just wreak so much havoc when they do hit. But like the samurai,
it's like choosing a claymore versus a side sword, right?
Right. He's like, yeah, you can destroy a one cannon can destroy a whole regiment of people on horseback. But check this out, and he can
in 10 seconds I can take out five
wings.
Dudes.
Yeah, he can shoot the wings off a fly.
Yeah.
At the same time, he's like, okay.
They both have their place. Taekwondo has its place. You know, Muay Thai has its place. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, mm-hmm. they all have their place, right? So that's a great segue into our video. Mm-hmm. So tonight we've got a playlist of my Hollow Education Outreach Program content. Mm-hmm. Now, I did say I was going to send you the old versions, Alan. My phone was not happy with me trying to send all those old videos to you. And some of them were
no
long
worries.
As hell. So, but what I did for the last week and a half or so is I've been re-recording a lot of these exercises. The only thing, and I'll preface.
Remastering.
I like that. I like special edition, if you will. The George Lucas cuts. There's a distinct lack of Gungans though. So anyway, I have 12 videos in this playlist. I may or may not get through all of them tonight, but I do have, some things I want to get through. And part of that is they're going to parallel a little bit what we saw with Alan, but there's going to give us that chance, like we were just seconds ago talking about, to compare and contrast and kind of see value in both or all versions of something. Also, something that I did, I kind of debated doing it, but I've done it, is I've given credit to people at the end of the video, people or literature or things like that, that helped me with that specific concept. So they may or may not have been the actual person who taught me in the first place, but definitely over the act of, sort of refining a concept or technique, they were prominent sources of knowledge for me. So I did that. Obviously, I can't put everybody who's influenced me for any specific tech. I mean, the list would be ridiculous. But I like to give a little bit of credit to a few people just because they stood out to me as having been very important to my understanding of that concept. So the first video I want to do... it's just a background, music. At some point I'd like to add voiceovers, but for now we'll consider this a voiceover. Mm-hmm. The first one I want to do, Alan, is actually the one called, The Three Offenses under Shicho.
Okay.
So right, when you have
that
one
up for me.
Yep. So this is, before we start it, this is the core of Shicho for me. And the reason I say that is I forget where I heard this, but I heard a translation of Shicho as meaning three cuts. So I kind of took it a step deeper. And again, I don't know which Star Wars language that happens to be. I don't know where I even read that, but I read it somewhere. And so I rolled with it. And I take it one step further to mean just three. So like, the three cuts, the three defenses, the three offenses, and there's lots of things you can break down into threes. You can break them into sixes too. But I just like to use that three when I'm teaching Shicho because it's a simple number. And also when I'm doing things, I'll do them in three speeds, or I'll do them three repetitions, then switch sides, that kind of thing. I just find that number three to be really useful for beginners. So for form one, it's a very prominent thing. So we'll start with this one. The three offenses, or the three cuts, is the way that I just colloquially say it when I'm teaching. So we'll start this in 3, 2, 1, go. Just some logos in the beginning. Another thing that I will preface with is I base everything on 10 zones of attack and defense. Modernist Screama, a lot of times you'll see the number 12. I just take the head, which is usually in like 3 to 5 zones, and I gobble it down to 1 to 3 zones. That's all. So you've got zones 1, 2, 3, 4. 5 is upwards. 6 is down through the diagonal. 7, 8, uh-huh. 9, and 10 is the bisector vertically downward. So the reason I say it just to point it out that way is so now that you can watch this, we've got the sideways version. So the three cuts being chop, which stops at the middle of the target. Slice, which moves through, or slash, I think I call it in the video, same thing, which moves through the middle of the target. And then your stab, which some people refer to as a thrust, which goes into the middle of the target, does not have an arcing cut to it. So yeah, that's the next one we have here is slash. And I'm doing all of these. So go ahead.
So the idea is the same movements, just with a different intent.
Correct. Now, of course, as you get further along in your training, I do certain things. Like right now, I'm cutting 90% of these with the fore edge of the blade, or the front part of the 360 degrees. But like, I think number 9, 8 or 9, coming up from the leg, I do with the back of the blade, or what you would call the spine on a normal sword. Just because it's a little more comfortable, but you could do that with all of them. You could change, you could do it where you're hitting with what would be the flat for all of them, just to get an idea of the different motion. And another thing I'm doing is I'm doing it all with the strong side forward, but down in the description, I said like change the footwork, do it with a partner. So there's lots of ways that you can take this very simple 2-minute drill and turn it into like a 2-hour class.
Yeah. Definitely.
So thoughts,
Alan? Once you understand the 10 zones that you're targeting, it definitely is basically putting your mind into the intention of your attack.
Correct.
So a lot of this is training intention. And there are only certain things that you can, there's only so many ways to bend an elbow, right? So when we're looking at something like this, it is more of a, like, this is what we're looking for, and this is your intention. Now here's how to get from A to B.
Right. And you'll see at the end here, a little special thanks for Sensei K there, and from Bendu Saber Combat, Matt Maughan. I believe he subscribes to the three. He must have read the same article or whatever that I read about the whole three strikes, because looking back at some of his Shicho content, I've seen that pop up in his as well. So those are the two people that I thanked for this particular video, in addition to yourself and Katie and Eric, because over the last, almost 8 years, our conversations over the seven form just been, you know, we've covered everything. So, so that's the first one. And I don't know, give me some feedback while we go to the next one, which will be the three defenses. So go ahead and pull that one up.
Three defenses. Okay, hold on.
Yeah, take your time.
All right, I got it.
So we'll hit play in just a second here. But yeah, to me, you know, a cut and dry video. Nothing too crazy. The one thing I want people to...
Shicho shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, then the one thing I want people to realize is this is setting the stage now for, okay, those same three offenses are going to be the three cuts you use in Makashi. You're just going to be able to do them in 100 different ways after that. When you come to a taru, you're going to like doing it with the flat or the back of the blade or whatever the case is. That's going to really help you when you get to a taru, but you don't get that from a 2-minute video.
Right.
So let's move into the three defenses then just right away.
So just as a throwing this out there, the word she in Japanese is synonymous with death.
Interesting.
And the the number 4.
Oh. And Ichi-ni-san, she, yeah, she is the number 4.
Yeah. And then Cho, just so you know, is means butterfly.
Huh, interesting. So deadly butterfly or death butterfly, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, so just if only Shicho was Japanese, that would be pretty badass. Oh, that's funny. Well, I like it.
Anywho.
You just gave me it's not the same number, but I'm still a fan. Well, anyway, if somebody finds that translation, send me an email, sabermaoutreach@gmail.com. I'd love to know where the hell I found that information. And if not, I made it up and I'm rolling with it. Let's do the three defenses. By the way, I use the word rudiments. If anybody plays percussion, rudiments would be like your paradiddles, your drum rolls, your single taps, your double and so all that. Your basics. It's just basics.
The things that are rudimentary.
Yeah, but they're not always basic when it comes to martial arts. So that's why I stayed away from the term basics because some of these are not basic, but they are rudimentary. So anyway, just a little insight into my brain, which sometimes is more complicated than I wish. 3, 2, 1, go. The three defenses from Shicho. So this is going to follow the same format, strong side forward, but you can change the footwork and things. But now we're going to cover the three defenses, which would be block, parry, and evade.
Okay.
A block, just like a chop, would stop at the target or wait for the target to get to it. This is the way I would teach.
Right.
A parry would guide the target away or move through the target like a slash. And then an evasion is a direct movement out of the zone. In this, when you get to evasion, you will see that I still cover with a blocking motion with the blade. Mm-hmm. So it looks like I'm actually moving and blocking, but the goal would be that blade is just there for insurance. I don't actually need to block.
Right.
And then in Seresu later, I get into voiding, which is moving the actual blade out of the way of a strike.
Nice. Your definitions of block and parry are right on. And evasion is literally that. But I do like the fact that you're talking about moving the blade as you move, because you can't just, step off the line. You're not dodging a train. You're dodging, somebody that can actually get off the line with you if they see you start to move.
And you see my little hoppy motions here. I call this an initial step. I got that terminology from my teachers. Some people call it a step drag or a hop step, but basically it is that. I try not to move my feet together at all. I try to keep a pretty equal distance between my feet, but I do have to initial meaning the foot closest to the direction I want to travel. So the initial foot heading in that direction. I don't know where they got that terminology. It's just the terminology I use. So for that one, I thanked Kay again because of his Shicho prowess, but also I put Courtney Monroe on this one, old Darth Chocolate himself, because I've seen some of his, we'll call it holocron content, and he was very, the way that he formatted his stuff was very inspiring to me to do it this way as well. So shout outs to those guys. Anything else you want to talk about on that one, Alan? Again, cut and dry.
Well, as far as defenses are concerned, right there, the definition of defense is to not get hit, and anything that you can do to not get hit in this context, block, parry, strike, all the things that are there. the evasion is my favorite because it means that blade and body move together.
Yeah.
But that's my personal preference.
Well, you talked about that last week with your content as well. Blade and body moving together with Shicho. Same thing.
Yeah.
And how it was to disrupt the structure of the person, which we talked about comes up later in form 5. So here it is again. Shicho is every form. Yeah. Every form is Shicho. And I'm hoping with these two videos in particular that comes across. That's kind of my goal with these two videos.
Yeah. And the fact that you're saying this is the rudimentary stuff, right?
Yeah.
This is really how it goes. Yeah. This is the stuff that every beginner has to learn if they've never done any of this stuff before, right? You just go through it quickly. And if you've done it before, this should be something that's already in your body.
I put that in the description. They are used in DESMA system as warm-ups as well as tools for learning new SMA forms and honing basic techniques. And I think suitable for practitioners of all experience. So in other words, like just because this is your 10th year, or your 10th day doesn't mean that you should stop practicing these.
Right.
Yeah. Right on with that. I'm glad you picked that up. Okay, so let's move into, because we're going to jump now from form 1. We're going to stay in form 1 for the next one, but then I'm going to jump you into form 3 to follow that. So let's go to the Shicho Kata guards and strikes.
Okay. Gotcha.
Now in this one, and I, again, in the description, I'm like almost too descriptive. I put all the guards you need to know. I put all the strikes you need to know, all the footwork that you need to know to do it similar or how I've showed. And this is a 9.5 minute video, so we probably won't watch the whole thing. But the reason it's 9.5 minutes is because I took the stationary version and then I added at least two versions of I think three versions of footwork. There's that number. There's that number 3 again. So we can peek at those, but we don't need to watch all 9.5 minutes. So we'll see what we can do here. And eventually, I'd like to add chapters to this particular video for that reason.
Awesome.
So anyway, anybody who's listening, we'll start this out. Shicho Kata, guards and strikes, and 3, 2, 1, go. So for this one, I use the term kata almost loosely. A lot of times a kata is only done one way, maybe on both sides, but it's only done from point A to point Z, and you don't usually change footwork or things like that. But in this kata, I'm using that term so loosely that you can do things like change the footwork. You can change which side is forward. And I think I did all of these things in this video. I went ham. So you can see here, I'll go through the cuts for you and everything on the next run through on the side view. We'll just let people see the first run through. There's 7 guards and there's 6 cuts, but there's only 3 types of cuts.
Okay.
So that should give you an idea. And the 7 guards, it's really 3, then 3 fool's guards, then a special guard. So middle guard goes into a stab. Then high guard goes into a slash. Then low guard goes into a chop. Then I have long point or middle fool, and the cuts repeat. So then high fool through the slash, low fool or tails guard through the chop. And then we come to eye guard or key guard, depending on who you talk to.
Yeah.
So there's your...
Well, that's good.
There they are. And then
That was with the offhand side forward. So the non-weapon hand.
Correct. And for some reason, for Shicho, when I'm two-handing, it feels more comfortable for me to put the offhand side forward. But I know for a lot of people, they teach the weapon side forward. So I've done both now.
Yeah.
And these are arbitrary zones.
Safer when your weapon. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, it does. It feels a little safer. I don't know if that's true or not, but you can definitely get your weapon manipulated more easily.
It depends on your result.
So we'll go through stationary, and then we'll kind of jump into a little bit of the footwork, but I'm not going to go too crazy. We're already 2 minutes into this video. One thing I want to say is these cuts could be anywhere, and the reason I put them in this particular order is just that they were the most economic as far as motion. If I'm starting in middle guard, it's really easy to just thrust. if I'm starting in long point, I'm already thrusting, so I just lean or lunge into it. If I'm starting in high guard, a slash makes a lot of sense because I'm coming from on high all the way down low. So anyway, that's just why I chose that order, but you can switch it up.
Yeah, that's good. Well, the thing about it is, again, as a martial arts teacher, you have the ability to go, okay, if I only move, you know, my weight forward and back as I swing my sword, I can make a beginner able to do that, you know. Whereas if you started off with what we're seeing now with the footwork, then, you know, their heads would explode immediately as soon as you start to go, okay, you have to step here, you have to do this, you have to shift your weight like this. So the again, rudimentary style of like, okay, here is this one part of this technique, and then here's another part of this technique. Now put it together. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Right? That's basically the key of teaching any sort of basics, so that all of this stuff makes sense later, you know, while you're in a match, or while you're in your kata, you can start to extrapolate the information. You can extrapolate the intent. You can extrapolate actual tech.
Extrapolate. Yeah. We like that.
Well, that's basically why, for you and me, you know, as we do this stuff, we're watching a specific set of movements, and you and I can be like, oh, that looks like this particular thing that I used to know or used to practice, and, you know, I would probably do the same thing but with something else, because again, there's only so many ways to bend an elbow. But if you're looking at this and going, okay, well, that looks more like a katana strike, and then another person will look at it like, oh no, that's a longsword technique. It's like, no, it's both.
Yeah, it's a lightsaber strike. And again, that's what I'm hoping people glean, because it's important to go through those steps of like, this looks like this. No, it looks like this. No, I think it looks like this. But it really, that's important to go through those steps, because it's all correct and it's all incorrect and it's all correct again. Like one teacher explained it to me as, you learn a punch and then you learn a different punch, and there's two different punches, and then you learn a kick, and it's a different, and then you two different kicks, and then you learn a third, and then you learn a third, and then you are in it for 10 years, then you're in it for 20 years, and a punch is just a punch, a kick is just a kick, doesn't matter which martial art you learned it from. We've talked about that in other episodes. But then another teacher came to me and said it almost the exact same way that you did too, where it's like, this isn't exactly how you said it, but, you know, all the information is good, then all the information that isn't your information sucks, then all of the information is good again, and you have to go through kind of that evolution.
Absolutely.
So for me, really quickly, just if anybody's wondering where that number three comes in again, the three types of footwork that I demonstrate here, aside from stationary shifting, which means my feet stay put and I just turn from one stance into another on the balls of my feet. For me, the three types of footwork, meaning traversing footwork, would be a step through, otherwise known as a C step in some arts, because you make the letter C from the inside to the outside, which I didn't do very well. I have an initial step, which I explained earlier as using the foot closest to the direction of travel, then catching the other foot up to it into the same stance. That's a complicated way of saying hop with the front or whichever foot is going that way. And then a shuffle, which would be your feet do almost come together, but then they immediately extend back into the location they came from. Now in Ataru, we'll add more to that. We'll add leaping, we'll add spinning and things like that.
Awesome.
So I think 6.5 minutes, we're coming to the end of this one, 6 minutes and 52 seconds to be exact on my dial. We can hit pause on this and we'll go right into a different version of this same one. So anybody listening, you can hit pause on the recording now and finish the video if you'd like, or you can jump in with us, because it's just going to go through a little bit more footwork. Everything else is the same. We're going to go scroll down to Suresu, Kata, Guards, and Nulls. And I use the word nulls after much determination. Because it took me a long ass time to kind of decide what I was going to call, because defenses, I like it, but for Cerezo, it wasn't powerful enough.
Right.
So null to me, I'm nullifying anything they do if I'm a Cerezo practitioner. It's said that a Cerezo practitioner may not be able to beat you, but they are unbeatable. So if I can nullify everything you do, then that's what I want. So in this one, I'm using those three defenses, the block, the parry, and the evasion. But I'm calling them nulls because between the guards, I want the practitioner to envision that this attack has all this intention coming at you, and what you do is just, it just puts water on the fire.
I like it.
So let's, really quickly, I use, and we'll go over this in a minute. Maybe that's the next video we'll watch. I have your block and your parry, but there's also something called an infinity parry, that I'm going to go over, and that's just what I call it. I'm sure there's 100 different words for it. So that's in this as well. So it's block, infinity parry, and evasion. But between that, the three guards are still the same. But you will see a difference in how I perform them in Cerezo versus how I perform them in Shicho. So 3, 2, 1, begin. And
that sounds good. I'm looking forward to the to this.
To the comparison. And this one, I didn't show any footwork. This is just the stationary version. What'd you say?
I said I love Cerezo, this is awesome.
So offhand side forward for this one again, and the majority of time in Cerezo, offhand side forward. And I'll go over these on the side view. I'll kind of commentate what guards I'm doing. And you notice I'm one-handed on this one as well. So I'll go through everything. I start with a salute into middle guard, with a block into high guard, infinity parry into low guard, evasion into long point. We got a block into fool's high, infinity to tail guard, evasion into eye guard, and then we salute again. And then I got crafty at the end of these Cerezo videos and started adding the word resilience in Arabesh.
So, for go ahead. Cerezo, all right, the biggest, like, I feel like the biggest lesson to be learned in Cerezo is the resilience or the endurance, and to be able to interpret that, right, is very important to anybody's Cerezo form, right? Because there is a lot of defense, you know, that has to be done.
Right.
Of course, it is the defensive form, but it was the defensive form, and then, you know, pushing up my nerd glasses right now to combat blaster fire.
Right.
Right. But like, you're not really
facing blaster
fire. Facing blaster fire with in the
or more than one opponent.
World. So like
most of the time,
that's really that's the interpretation I went with.
Right,
you're not actually, nobody's going to be sitting there shooting a Nerf gun at you as you're fighting. Okay, it's not
we've done it. It's fun. I recommend people try it, but yeah, you're right. Nobody's doing it.
Well, how about this? You won't be doing that in a tournament.
Exactly. Yeah.
But if you do and you can pull it off, let me know how you pull it off.
We actually do have some experimental rules, but that's to be determined.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
But yeah. You're right. Yeah,
so, blaster stance is not a thing in most tournaments.
Correct.
But there is something to be said about actually taking source material and interpreting it.
Yeah.
Interpreting it in a way of art and still keeping it in the martial sense.
Yeah.
So I'm going to Now, I feel like I'm a sequel apologist, because I actually like some of the fights in the sequel trilogy.
I get
But
you.
it's one of those things where I'm like, there is no, because of the story, right? There is no formal training, so Rey just does stuff, and Kylo Ren just does stuff.
Well, and that's
He got
kind of the
like
purpose
the
of,
rudimentary forms. He got the rudimentary forms, and then he just went off and did his own
That's
thing.
kind of the purpose of this
So
holocron stuff too. Like, how many people really have access to somebody, not like us, but like us, where they actually care about like taking this a little bit seriously, and they actually know a little bit of martial arts they could teach on top of it. But how many people are like that? They come to YouTube for it. They
Right.
come
Well,
to the internet.
also when you go through formal training and you are called upon to fight, chances are you're going to do the same thing that works over and over again. You're
Yeah,
not
that's
going
true. That's a good
to
point.
you're and only when it doesn't work do you try to find something
Yeah.
new. So, very important part of the training is doing something new, not for the sake of doing something new, but
Right.
because if what you do that works well does not, you have something to fall back upon, something new that you can train with. So this is very good as far as I'm saying, like the stepping, the you call them nulls or nullifications. Like a lot of the movement that I see when I'm watching this is, okay, I am taking this angle and I am going to use this one technique in order to not get hit and then get to a different position,
That's very
which
key for
is,
form three in particular for me. I'm glad you picked up on that. I'm really glad you picked up on that because we're going to watch a combo later on where that is the whole purpose of the combo. And I told you last week, I don't even teach attacks in Ceresu, but you're going to get a little peek into my cheek with that one because not my butt cheek, my cheekiness. Because I do actually, there's an offense in this combo, but it's taught as a defensive posture that happens to cut them because of the motion before. So yeah, I'm really glad you picked up on that. Oh, that makes me okay. That makes me feel like, I hate to use the word validation because it sounds so needy, but it makes me feel like, okay, I'm not totally full of the donkey poop. That's good to know.
No, again, this is your interpretation of it, and I'm just saying that that's a good
You're picking up on the
idea.
interpretation.
It's a good an interpretation of it, because then I can, like, my eye went, okay, that's what he's trying to
I
do, and
love
that
that.
does fit into the, it fit into the idea or the chapter of Ceresu that I understand as well.
And if you're forming a system, I feel like this is all martial arts. You have to do it this way. I mean, this is the natural way that I don't know. Maybe you don't have to. I shouldn't say it that way. But the way my brain naturally goes is I have to think of concepts and I have to think of how these concepts fit into what I'm told about the thing, right? So if I'm learning karate
Exactly. It's
and it's knife attacks today, like, first of all, this is a very bad situation. If I know that concept, then I can learn anything about knife attacks. But that's a funny example, but it goes for anything. That today we're learning how to kick to the body. So if I know that this martial, blah, 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 I can learn it based on my understanding of the concept or my interpretation of what I'm told about that concept. So I'm glad you picked up on that because it should be that easy. It should be that simple. To just go, okay, this angle, or now I'm moving this way, why wouldn't I just move this way next? I feel like we fight what I call the monkey brain all the time. That monkey brain just wants to do the
Constantly.
thing. It just wants to do it. It just wants to do it right, and it wants to do it right every time. But our human brain fights our monkey brain all the time. And in martial arts, let your monkey brain take over.
Well, sometimes it's useful.
So let's go
And that's the
into.
thing. It's
Go ahead.
so I wanted to go on a tangent here a little bit,
That's fine.
because you talked about a knife fight.
Yeah.
So I had the pleasure, question mark, of watching the remake of Roadhouse with Jake
Oh,
Gyllenhaal
you
and
saw it?
Conor McGregor.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm it's on my list.
It's
Just because I'm a
I
martial
sat
arts
here and
nerd.
watched it. Yeah, I sat here and watched it, and it is an MMA movie through and through. But it's just really funny, like the at one point the main character who Jake Gyllenhaal plays is basically like, hey, that guy has a knife under his shirt. You know, when he comes at he talks to another bouncer and he says, you know, when he comes at you, take a big step back, punch him in the face. And I don't know how many times I've taught knife defenses where you have to address the knife. You have to address the knife. You have to address the knife. And there are so many martial arts where you have to address the knife, whereas in you're just like, just don't get cut. I was
You
like,
have to address
no,
not
he's not
getting
wrong.
cut. That's 100% correct. It's a nuance though, and that's like I love this kind of episode we're doing for that reason because you're getting like we've been there. And we've been the ones teaching like you have to address the knife. Nowadays I teach you have to address not getting cut. You have to address that. And you're gonna, by the way, so you have to address making sure you don't get cut in the soft and squishies.
And choose where you get cut. That's where it happens.
Yeah,
You
and
get to choose where
cut
you get
them
cut.
twice every time they cut you know, or get that damn knife as fast as you can, or get the hell out of there as fast as you can. That's a whole episode in and of itself, but it's a valid comparison. Let's go into
Well,
speaking of.
that was a very Ceresu thing that he taught. So that's what made me think about it.
It is. It's a very Ceresu thing. And in Filipino martial arts, especially at a high level, you're not addressing the knife. You're addressing the hand that holds the knife. You're addressing the neck that holds the head, that holds the body, that holds the knife, right? So, yeah. Anyway, let's go to form two. And we'll kind of transition from the guards and cuts kata into an upgrade of what we saw from the Shicho guards. So in Makashi, I teach the hanging guards. And I do teach them an advanced Shicho, two-handed as well as one-handed, but a lot of times I'm trying to transition you into Makashi if that's a place where you like to hang out. So this would be Makashi point. Did I say point track? Yeah, point tracking. Makashi point tracking. Now, this is not necessarily guards of any kind. This is all the guards and none of the guards. It's really creating the circle with the tip of your blade and trying to create what I call the outer rim or the eggshell that is your zone of offense and defense for particularly a precise art such as Makashi. So this would be from about your eyebrows down around your shoulders and hips down to right around your shins. Okay, you create a little invisible egg around that, and I'm tracking that with the point of the weapon. So 3, 2, 1, begin. And this gives you the hanging guard sort of as a result of this exercise.
Yesalimiri.
Point tracking and just literally tracking your different 10 target zones with the point of the weapon. So I start in zone one and I move to zone two on the opposite side of the neck. Then zone three is the rib cage and arm area, and four would be the opposite side. And I'm trying to just make sure the point stays centered and sort of level. Five is the very center. Six is upper corner, seven other upper corner, and you notice I use a little C shape there. Eight and nine are very interesting because nine is a weird hanging guard. Your wrist is what you call supinated or wrist up. So anyway, this is just for somebody trying to get used to putting one weapon, holding one weapon, developing the wrist and arm and shoulder coordination and strength, developing the
So this is
offhand.
very much looks like one of the drills that I teach to the people that have done fencing. So it's very much a foil epee. Mm-hmm.
And I think I actually got it from mostly Side Sword and Saber, and I'll give credit. We'll see who I give credit to. That'll tell me. Oh, yeah. Nick and Michael Thomas from the Academy of Historical Fencing in England. These guys are legit, and they've been doing this forever on YouTube. They've been one of the original, what I call HEMA poop posters, if you will. And they're not. They're not poop posters at all. They're really, really legitimate martial artists. They're great people. And I think they've had training in other martial arts as well, like karate and things like that. So they're just... They're really good, but they have a ton of content that's been on here forever. And I didn't pick this drill up directly from them, but I definitely honed it to what it is, which is very simple. And thanks to them, it was simplified. So, yeah, all of their saber and side sword and rapier and stuff like that, really phenomenal content. So I delved heavily into that for all my Makashi stuff when I was – a few years ago, sort of looking back at all of it and going, I need more of this, I need more of that, I need less of this or whatever. So there's point tracking, and that leads us right into, since it kind of introduces the hanging guards, and you can give me any commentary you want, Alan, we're going to go into hanger transitions from there. So the next video is hanger Makashi transitions. Hanger transitions. Okay. And we'll just pause on that real quick. Anything you want to point out before we hit play?
No, like I said, this is the
very similar to something
the guards
you
that you showed, and the parries are straight out of fencing.
Even the stance, I adjusted the stance to toe forward, as opposed to toe kind of cocked at a 45, which is my usual stance. So, yeah, okay, let's go into this then. Hanger transitions: 3, 2, 1, go. And this one, it's not a true like alternating transitions. Like it doesn't go standard hanger, but I just kind of tried to go what was natural body mechanics. So I start out in a hanging guard, I believe. We'll find out here. Mm-hmm. All right. And I'm moving between standard guards and hanging guards. That's really it. Yep. I start in a hanger. I pop out to a 1, a hanger 2. And I call these hanging guards, but they could be blocks or parries as well. They could be like an actual intentional, not just a position for my blade to chill in.
Right.
So a hanger, so for like, anybody wondering, would just be anything where the tip is sub horizontal, you know, sub center.
Yeah, so the hilt is higher than the tip of the blade.
Correct. Yeah, that's a better way to say it. I don't know why I was saying all that nonsense.
Yeah.
5 is an interesting one. If somebody thrusts to the inside, you almost have to push or parry that out of the way. There's really very few ways to not parry that out of, unless you just dodge. But yeah, it's a simple drill. That one's over. Thoughts on that one?
That's good. So in doing some of Makashi, right, a lot of the look at that, you got Fight Saber on there.
Yeah. Everyone has Fight Saber. I also have Nick on there. I give credit to Nick and Doug on this one. Doug from San Diego Sabres and Nick Richardson from Penguin Saber Academy. The two true Makashi specialists that I know.
Yeah. So the Nick has been like a great resource, because he's actually like involved in fencing opens and all that fun stuff.
I get my stance from Makashi has been refined by watching Nick.
Yeah. And the fact that he's still in it and judging and going through, you know, that the eye of fencing is really, really cool, because you see it in his fighting, you see it in his students.
Yeah.
You know, they are very much my friend Tony Tripp, who is like an Olympic fencer, he actually went out to Virginia and won last October's Praxium War for Saber Light Knights. Shout out to Ryan and Courtney.
Yeah,
he did a little Makashi, you know, Makashi fencing hybrid class before I before or after I did my saber staff class.
Very
and
cool.
his point was like, no, if you're going to go up against a fencer, that if they're any good, they will wait for you to commit to something, and then they'll strike like a viper.
Oh, I can't wait.
Because
that's our next video.
Yeah.
That's our next video.
So his whole idea was like, no, if you are going to be good at fencing, you're going to have to address an attack, because that's the Olympic fencing rules, right? You can't just both attack at the same time. You have to address an attack. You have to have what's called right of way.
Yeah.
So that's much a
it's actually a rule. It's not Olympic it's fencing. Not just something that's courteous to do. It's a rule.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so that's
correct me if I'm
thing.
Wrong.
It's
not a rule, but is that not largely how Sanda is scored as well? Like, you get a lot of credit for like catching kicks and takedowns as counters and things like that. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, you get more points for doing a counter than you do a
because they still get points for hitting you. But if you can take, like, if they get 1 point for, or 2 points for a kick to the body, but you catch that kick and take them down, don't you get like 3 points or something like that?
Yeah, something of that.
So, yeah, you're just stacking up, and it's like an arcade game at that point for countering.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where you can get points no matter what. Like, hit,
similarity
get,
between
hit, whatever.
Sanda and fencing, I didn't think I was going to make today.
But yeah, so that's what I'm saying. That is like going through parries and your transitions there. That's what I saw. I was like, no, this is a movement in order to take somebody's attack and then counterattack from that position.
So that is our next video. I love it. Let's go into Makashi Rudiments Hangers with Counters. And this is every hanging guard. So all 10 zones, hanging guards. Uh-huh. And I use stabs and chops as my counters. Okay. And you'll see, I think for the most part, it's when I'm on my weapon side, I'm using a stab. And when I'm on my offhand side, I'm using a chop. But that'll take us into the next one as well, the next video as well. So let's go hangers with counters. And you'll see exactly what Alan's talking about. I'm waiting for the person to strike. I'm catching or parrying and immediately either riding their blade into a counter or, you know, disconnecting and what I call flick chopping. So 3, 2, 1, go. And again, the 10 zones. One side of the neck, the other side of the neck, ribs, center of the body. Shoulder, knee, center of the head. So that's kind of all 10 of them in that order. And with Makashi, I'm almost always strong side forward. So I start in my hanger, and I come immediately into a thrust to the cheek. Then my other hanger comes to a very short chop. That's the key with these Makashi drills is I'm not trying to overextend because I'm only using one wrist to support all that hilt and blade. And it gets a little strained when I do that. So I want my chops to be efficient. They could be slashes. I'd have to recover with something like a Molinet or an extra whirl of the arm, though, on a slash for a lot of these.
Yeah, especially when you're dealing with parries, a lot of times, just because we tend to have adrenaline flowing through us, we tend to over parry, especially when we first start. And to practice the fast twitch of I've made contact, I should counterattack here
immediately
is very important.
To what's immediately open. For me, that's the big thing, like. Especially with Makashi, you know, with Suresu, you'll see I get into a little bit more of what could be perceived as wasted motion. But with Makashi, I mean, zero waste for any reason. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not wasted in Suresu, you're still not going to do it in Makashi if it's not worth your 2.5 milliseconds. And who did I give credit to on this one? The Academy of Historical Fencing again. But I should mention that was probably just due to the fact that I couldn't two Nicks. I got a little confused. This is largely how Nick Richardson has success in competition.
Which video is this?
The one we just watched, the hangers with counters. In terms of a quick parry, it might not be a hanging parry.
My video kept playing, and I was like, "Oh, are we on flick chops now?"
No, but that is the next one because that's what I used in that video. Okay. So we'll prep that one. But would you agree with that assessment of Nick's fighting style?
Oh yeah. Nick is very quick, in doing it, but he likes to fight more defensively, mm-hmm. mainly because of that fencing background.
Yeah.
Even though he is very adept at what he does, sometimes it could be to his detriment to wait for somebody to attack.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to see and to watch when you watch a fencer fight. Like, there are certain things, especially in lightsaber combat, that just won't work. And sometimes it is because there's a ticking clock, you know, before
or the ring is only a certain size. That's another one that comes up sometimes.
Right. And it's not a strip. So there's a lot more, lateral movement and stuff like that, but it is still, you know, one-on-one, which is to the fencer's,
Definitely.
Delight, I guess.
And the term contention for Makashi, which I added to the end of some of these videos. I got wise to it and added that to the end. But it that's what it means to contend with or to one on one provide a superior solution to the problem at hand, much to the chagrin of your opponent and the rapid chagrin of your opponent. So let's move into flick chops because that's what I did in that video. And one thing about this that you'll see is I'm using the spine of the blade as well as the fore edge. And I do that, again, for economy of motion, but also just to give a different flavor. This is a lightsaber. It's not a sword. So you can use the whole blade to cut with. And a lot of times you'll find your blade, especially on the lower positions, 8 and 9. So let's go 3, 2, 1, go. Especially on 8 and 9 by your knees, you'll find that an upward motion is a lot easier and more economical than a full turning of the wrist to cut upwards. But, you know, it depends on the situation and your body at the time. So that's what this is. Only using my wrist or to chop and trying not to let it extend past center because then my wrist is not able to support. So you've got your two neck targets and such. And I think on 5, I might start with the, 5 is the spine of the blade. 6 and 7, I use the fore edge again. 8 and 9, I think spine for both of them. And then on 10, I use the fore edge, but I do teach a cool back edge strike just for Makashi that I might show on a different video. Go ahead, Alan. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I was thinking about the different things and going back to our one of our favorite sources for these swarms, the Path of the Jedi.
Yep.
This is the lunge or the piercing motion. I believe they called it a shim.
Shim.
In that book.
Yep.
And then she met chop. And then, or maybe Cho means chop and she means slash or something like
yeah,
that.
But yeah, but they do use like the same sort of terminology, same definitions almost.
Yeah.
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 Actually, I forgot about that.
Very much.
I forgot about that. I can't believe I forgot. I used that too. Oh, man.
But that's one of those, things where you said contention form, but it's also like economy of motion. Is how I see Makashi, where you're going to cut the angle just right. You're going to use the least amount of least amount of energy to get the result done.
Right.
Right. So it might not be the flashiest form, but it gets the work done.
Right.
But if done with some flash, like what we just saw, you know, it gets a little bit of, that's where the term hand sniping comes from.
Right.
You know, just riding their blade into their hand, going into the
that was thing. Definitely so on my mind for this video. Definitely on my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically what I saw nice. In that.
Good. I'm glad. Okay. This is good. Things are translating. I like that. Well, then I think we have time to finish. So I'll just show these last couple of videos are just a couple minutes each. So I think we're going to have time. We're going to go into the last Makashi video, which is called Lunging Stabs. And this is Makashi bread and butter. This is as rudimentary as it gets when you're transitioning from Shicho into Makashi, in my opinion. Which is worth as much as you paid for it, which is $0, according to my podcast accounting. So, anyway, this is basically your classic fencing stab. But when I say fencing, I think of fencing more in a classical sense of rapier and side sword than foil epee saber, just because that's actually the first type of fencing I was introduced to through like Zorro and such. I found Olympic fencing and I was like, oh, people actually do what Zorro did just with safer equipment. So in my mind, that's always been fencing to me first. So you'll see particularly the extension of the body, in my opinion, is a little more structured than extended. But that's one of those things that like it takes sort of a martial artist's eye to appreciate the difference, and neither one is bad. It's just that this is the way my body has learned it because of the scope. Right. So lunging stabs, 3, 2, 1, go. This is really just about being able to extend yourself, fully commit to an attack, but also recover. And that's a big deal. So hopefully it doesn't look like I'm trying too hard to recover. I haven't actually paid that much attention, so I'll pay attention now.
lunging with the front leg.
Lunging with the front leg as opposed to a full body lunge. This would just be a one-legged lunge.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's an interesting thing because especially in Olympic fencing and all that, like, you know how long your opponent's arm is, you know how long their sword is.
And you have measurements on the floor of how long the pitch is.
Yeah. And whereas in lightsaber matches, as far as I've seen, you're looking at, you know, a huge difference in blade length, in hilt length, in arm length, and in stride length. So it's a little bit more important, especially like what you're doing here is throwing your other arm out.
Yeah, you can't see that until the side view very well, but that's an important concept that I was hoping you would say. Go ahead.
Yeah, it'll get you another 2 or 3 inches to throw your other arm.
Well, and you stay balanced and recovery becomes easier because to me, pushing with my front foot to get back into my fighting stance is I don't want to say easy, but you know, I've trained it, I can do it, but pulling my arm back to my small of my back is also sort of helping to physically pull everything back together. And I gave Nick a lot of credit for this one.
Yes.
But I gave Doug and the Academy of Historical Fencing credit because I refined the technique based on Academy of Historical Fencing. But if you want to see somebody who knows how to do this and recover, Doug Dierman from San Diego Sabres knows how to do this and recover. And there's a whole lot of Doug. He's not a large individual, but he's very tall and long. And there's a whole lot of him to go and come back. And he can do it very fast.
Yeah, he's amazing.
All credit where it's due on this one. And for such a key concept in Makashi, I think it's important to give people a good credit for that one.
Yeah, great point too. Like, and Doug's former Padawan Robert also was very good at all of that.
Yeah.
He's very good at recovering. That's the thing. It's like once you're committed, you got to recover if you don't, especially if you don't hit.
Oh, he was annoying. Robert was an. I should give Robert credit too, because he. I think I did in one video. I can't remember which one, but I didn't stay for the credits of all of them. He was annoyingly so, annoyingly good at recovering. Doug was just as fast at extending, but man, Robert was way too good at recovering, and so irritating as a form five fighter to fight someone like Robin. Oh, Robert, because he's just never there for the counter. He,
Yeah, exactly.
so let's go back into form three now. We have two form three videos and then we're done for the night.
Sure.
But we'll have more of these in the future, Alan. I know you've got a ton of content. I know you're probably going to go out and film a bunch more now anyway. We've got Courtney on hold. Maybe we'll do some of this with his stuff that he has. So we've got two more of these for me, and I've got more in the video queue to be edited too, so we'll come back to all this. But we're going to go into Form 3 Infinity Parrying from Suresu. Infinity Parrying, which some might call figure eights, some might call just spins or flourishes, but I call them Infinity Parries for a specific reason, and that reason is my blade doesn't stop until I tell it to. So
Yeah, definitely.
in this particular one, you do spin, but sometimes it's not a spin. Sometimes it's sort of like in your Makashi combo from last week, like that, what do you call it? Like Sword of Heaven, what is that called? Where it goes in front of your face. It's not really a true spin. It's sort of like a, you know what I'm talking about?
You lost me. I'm not sure which. You said Sword of Heaven, and I was like, what?
In your Makashi five hit combo, I believe it's the second strike. It recovers in front of your face before you go to the next
Oh,
angle.
okay,
Wait,
yeah.
doesn't that
You're
have
correct.
what is it called?
No, it's just my 1 through 5
Oh, I
combination.
thought
There's
that strike had
no
like a
actual.
particular like name in Kung Fu that had like the word heaven or something in it. But you know, I could just be
No.
making up cool stuff in my head because I'm that guy.
I mean, we can make something happen. There is a straight sword technique, which a lot of my Bakashi is based upon.
Well,
There's a
that's what I'm
straight
referring to. I've seen it in Straight Sword, and I
yeah,
don't know if it has a special name or
there's a
not.
straight sword technique called Steel Cloud, which basically is what
Yeah, that's what
you're
I'm describing,
referencing.
basically. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. That
Steel
sounds
Cloud.
right enough to me. I like that even more than Heavenly Sword or whatever I said. So yeah, I like Steel Cloud a lot, but that's gonna be my screen name on some forum where I'm
Nice.
gonna talk crap about all different sword. Nobody's sword is gonna be good enough for me. That's gonna be my shtick on there. Okay, so let's go into Infinity Parry. My point with all that was any of those could be an infinity parry in Suresu, just meaning you address the defense, but your blade never stops and it goes right into the next thing, sort of like we described in the beginning of the episode with the first videos. So three, where did I go? Infinity parrying. 3, 2, 1, go. And I'm gonna do this, I believe, in two speeds. So the first two angles, front and side view, are at a normal-ish speed. But then the second two angles would be full speed, no stopping whatsoever. So you'll see it kind of looks like I'm doing the same zones over and over again, but that's where in your mind you have to keep each zone straight. And I've also referred to these as slap parries before because you're sort of slapping the attack out of the way.
So what I like about this is the fact that you're again twisting your waist
My structure, yeah.
to change your structure to make your structure go with your parry. So when you're going in and doing especially when you're fighting, it's so important to keep moving and not just move one part of your body, but your whole body. Because if like you were describing to about Robert, the best block is to not be there, right? It's like
Yeah.
if It just, if you're not there, then they can't counterattack. So it's very, very much one of those concepts, right? To parry and move, not just parry. That is an important part of any sort of, not just weapons fighting, but any sort of fighting, is to be able to go from an attack and then not be there for the counterattack, right? So it's super important to practice that skill, practice that technique, and be very much okay with moving. And unfortunately, sometimes there are martial arts out there that will discourage that. The only but the thing is, they don't discourage it, they just tell you to do it better. That's the weirdest thing, right? So they tell you to do it, but don't do it. And the one of the best ones I can think of is there, and I'm probably going to get the actual name wrong, so I'm not going to say it out loud. So there is a style of Spanish rapier dueling that is basically done in a small circle,
Oh,
and it's,
I've seen this before, but I have no clue what it's called.
yeah, so it's really cool and really awesome thing.
Spanish rapier is
Basically,
special. I have a very special place in my heart for Spanish rapier.
so basically unlike a lot of your I'm gonna throw a bunch of movies under the bus here. Unlike your Three Musketeers, whatever flavor of Three Musketeers that you've watched, like there is no long hallway where you're fighting. There is no anything like that. It's literally you and your opponent measure your swords. You walk in a circle, and that's it. That's the only space that you have.
And isn't this particular style largely, if not completely, thrusting focused or stab focused?
And so sometimes they do it with a small dagger as well. So they'll do
With
the
a little
spot
bit of
at
a
Ikaga.
parrying ability.
They have a parrying dagger and a rapier, or
I've seen this being taught before, and just the efficiency of some of these people's ability to turn their arms and angle their shoulders and their necks to just barely not get freaking slit, like put a keyhole right through you.
Well, that's what I saw when you're twisting and doing that.
With the
But here's I'm gonna maybe break some hearts out there. That only works if the other person's playing that game with you. So if
You can't play
and
that
that's
game
kind of,
with somebody who's using a full array of wide, flashy swings and it's just not, you have to address the real threat, which is all that stuff coming at you.
And it, all things being equal, right? Your body mechanics and your body, right? Your actual, arm reach and everything like that. That does make a big factor in whether or not those techniques will work. They are great techniques and they're really good. I encourage everybody to learn about it and do it. The only thing that is very constant is the fact that not there are there are no
No
perfect
constants.
I was gonna say there are no perfect
Perfect
situations.
techniques,
You're gonna
perfect
have to
situations, yeah.
practice a bunch of different techniques in a bunch of different
Right.
ways in order to deal with what you have,
Oh
right?
my gosh.
If I
You are the
was
king of the freaking segues, Alan, because that tells us about our next video, but go ahead and finish your thought.
Well, I was gonna say, if I was a 7 foot tall, 300 pound athlete that swings a sword, I will fight incredibly different than the guy that is, 5 foot 8 and likes to jump around.
Yeah. I
So
feel seen. I'm not 5 foot 8, but I feel seen. I'm even shorter than that, but Somebody saw me down here. You know, with just really quickly to cap off kind of what we're talking about in terms of moving your structure, and somebody you're mm-hmm. very familiar with, Richard Marsden, who teaches mm-hmm. the Phoenix Society of Historical Swordsmanship, which I should have mm-hmm. given credit to in at least that video. His Polish saber instruction, there's a lot of talk of squaring the hips behind the blade instead of using the arm for all of that motion, but it does use a lot of this type of infinity motion or Molinés and things like that. Right. Particularly because that type of sword has a fatter tip, a heavier tip, mm-hmm. and it lends itself well to those sort of recovering motions and things. But just to have your hips behind also, it helps quite a bit.
Yeah, and the fact that it is a slashing weapon more than it is a piercing weapon.
Correct, and you're almost slashing with your hips in that case, which is a very interesting weapon to get into. And I have a few things that I use it for, and might get into that in one of these episodes coming up, a swords and sabers or something like that. But the last thing I want to say about that is very fast, and then we'll do our last video very fast, is when you do that, it's easier to use more hip when you move a little slower or a little bigger, I mm-hmm. should say. It's easier to move faster if you use a little more arm, but you still have to use your hips for both. So it's just, as you saw me move faster, it looked like my arm did more of the work. It did. You know. Mm-hmm. Another thing is, I gave a lot of credit to Eskrima people and to a guy mm-hmm. named Snake Blocker, who is, I believe, an Apache, who teaches a lot of the knife and tomahawk stuff that I've picked up over time, which all of that addresses, like I said, I don't teach attacks in Suresu. These could all be attacks to the wrist or elbow, very Obi-Wan to cut somebody's arm off at the elbow. It's just super rude uh-huh. and Obi-Wan to do, and I'm all about it. Uh-huh. So I often use infinity parries as elbow slashes. So just something to keep in mind as those attacks are coming in. So if you choose to do that as a velocity, where you're doing it as a partner drill, then you can absolutely do it where you're targeting the blade, you're targeting the wrist, uh-huh. then you're targeting the elbow or higher. So that's just something to add to that.
Well, also you're, when you do some of these ideas, right? So we talked about Polish saber, we talked about rapier, we talked about, you know, tomahawk. A lot of this stuff, even Eskrima, remember that the weapons influence the martial art.
Yeah,
the weapons influence the movement, and it's up to you, the saber practitioner, to interpret those in your movements, because chances are a lot of the tomahawk movement, which is meant to be an inside attack, correct. And not, you know, coming from a fencer's lunge, is going to have to change slightly just to make it work.
Right.
Just so everything, again, this is lightsaber. We're not talking about a specific type of sword. We're not talking about the ridiculousness that rapiers eventually got to because they were, you know, dueling in the streets every day, and whoever's rapier was longer had the had the advantage. Oh, man. So, but we're talking about lightsaber, and in lightsaber, so if we're talking about lightsaber, right, you have to take what you know and you have to practice it with your lightsaber so many times that it becomes kind of instinct.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to let go of some stuff that doesn't work because of the length of your weapon.
Or the hilt. Yeah. Lots there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very last thing, because this actually mm-hmm. takes us into our, and you mentioned, a bunch of things that made me all hype about your segue. I don't even remember what it was now because I was so hype at the time. but this last video is called Suresu Velocity 147, and I said two ways. This is what I'm getting at. Those infinity parries. The other part of it is Suresu is the defense form. You're creating an absolute shell of defense around yourself by doing it that second way, where everywhere you spin your blade, you're blocking, you're cutting, you're blah blah blah. They can't get to you. You've just got a constant web of light around you. So this next velocity, the two ways are a little more rudimentary, where it's defend, defend, counter. And the counter is a guard that happens to chop. So that's a key thing for anybody listening. It's a counter that happens to chop. It could also be a stab. So zone one gets a block. Zone four gets a parry or infinity parry. And then zone seven is going to be just a guard to zone seven that happens to cut them at the neck. So let's watch this because it kind of takes all that Suresu before and gets it right in there. It also gives you a little hint of that Makashi with the flick chopping. So three, two, one, begin. And particularly with Suresu and Makashi, I mentioned other forms that these drills would be applicable to later if I felt that it was worth mentioning in the comments. So 1-4-7, zone one, zone four, zone seven. The first one is very cut and dry, and there's what I call triangular footwork. Just imagining there's a triangle on the floor and trying to hit the corners. That's all that means. Some people call it box stepping, which is four corners. So, you know, you math however you like to math. So you see there's a block, there's a parry, and then that parry becomes the guard. And that guard is in a little bit of a retreat. And I do it at three speeds as well. I do it slow, medium, fast for anybody that's curious. And the second version is just with those infinity parries. To four and seven. The guard at to one and four, rather. Just developing the ability to keep the blade moving. And always, this is something I talk about with no matter which form I'm teaching, is always making that blade more dangerous to your opponent than you. So this, with the infinity parries and such, it's really just a matter of trying to keep that blade moving in a direction that's either nullifying their danger or making it more dangerous to them than you.
Right.
And this could be any three zones as well. So.
Yeah.
You were saying?
So, I was saying one of the cool things about this is that the camera can't seem to focus on you because you're moving.
That's exactly. I couldn't tell until after I recorded it, but I was like, you know what? I'm gonna keep it. One day I'll get a nice camera, but
it just goes to show you, though, like if you are doing this and you're in a position to actually once again put yourself out there and practice on the internet and share it with others all around the world, it's one of those things that we can actually look at and go, okay, that's an interesting interpretation. Okay, now can you do it? That's the next step is literally practice.
Well, I agree 2000%, and we're coming so tight on time now. I want to wrap it up, but I do like that encompasses everything we're talking about. So, you know, I hope that people do watch. I don't know, I'm sweating saying that, but I do hope that people watch. I do hope that somebody sends us a message and says, you know, I do this so much better, or, you know, I do it this way, and here's a little bit of mine. With your permission, we would never share without your permission. But with your permission, we might even have you on the show to help us do a breakdown just like this. We're interested.
Let's talk about that really quick.
I'm here.
I'm
sorry. Really, really quickly. I just want to – the credit I gave for this one is very special to me. I just want to point that out because it's very special to me. I gave credit to Ed Parker, the founder of Kenpo, because Suresu to me, and particularly Gemso, is Kenpo. But we'll get to that later. But also, one of my Kenpo teachers. I call him Sifu Chuck because he started in Kung Fu. And he's a 6th degree Kenpo black belt. And the footwork in particular with the strikes, he was 100% Suresu because he was a small person. He was not old, but he wasn't young. And he had to rely a lot on parrying and doing things like kicking you to the knee underneath of his parry. Very, very Wing Chun sort of style.
Yes.
But karate movement. And so this 147 velocity is almost exactly the way that he would defend himself in class against, you know, when we would do like, you know, mock sparring and stuff like that. So I just wanted to point that out. But you were saying people who send us message, let's get back to that. Send us their stuff.
I was going to say, I would love to get people's 2 cents about this, but only in exchange for their videos as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to tell us, hey, you're doing it wrong, please show us how to do it right.
Or maybe
that's all I ask.
You know, depending on proximity, send us a message depending on proximity where you live compared to come out and let's do a little sparring session. We'll go to a martial art. We'll sign a waiver so everybody's legit. And let's do a little sparring session. And it won't be like, hey, let's come kick butt. No. Like, let's just because if I'm willing to videotape me sparring you, right, then you should be willing to be videoed. And
right.
That's another option. Like, maybe you don't have stuff, but maybe you really know what you're doing. Okay, well then, or go out, go get your iPhone, go outside, swing your broomstick around, show us, send it to us. I'm really interested, Alan, because even if you don't give us permission to show it, I'd love to be able to tell people that there are other people out there doing good stuff.
Yeah. Also, you know, in this day and age where it's so easy to be negative about something, you know, I would love to turn that negative into a positive and make a new friend out of whoever decides, you know, that what we're doing isn't correct. Great. Please show us how to do it correctly. Yeah. Please let us be friends and do stuff in the future together, because that's how communities work.
I love that. I love it when you see like Conor McGregor and Jose Aldo, all that smack talk leading up to that fight. For anybody who's ever seen it, or if you're curious, go back and look at those press conferences, all the lead up to that. Now, almost 10 years later, right? Like, those two are giving each other flack, but it's always tongue in cheek. They support each other in their fights and things. They give each other credit for being great fighters and all that. Like, I love when you see those kinds of things. So yeah, if we have that Conor McGregor Jose Aldo moment with one of our listeners, one of our viewers here, I'm kind of into it. Go ahead and tell us what you're doing right. I'm cool with it.
Yeah, and if you'll let us, we'd love to have you at Saber Mayhem Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, what a great the Segway King today.
And let's talk about it. We're going to have a Saber Summit. We're going to have hopefully a big group of people that represent the biggest Saber groups in the world. I'll try to even get somebody on Zoom if that's possible. And, you know, it would be great to just have that sort of presence to be able to say, hey, this is who we are. If you're in my area, you know, come on in. We'll get together. Here's our events. Here's the things that we'd love to do. Please reach out if you need, you know, if you need us to shout you out, please let us know. Because, you know, we have been doing this for a while, and there's so much good out there. There's a lot more good than there is bad.
That's accurate. And I feel like I perpetuate maybe the opposite of that by accident. I try not to. I do that by accident sometimes. But truthfully, there really is a whole – and that's why I gave credit at the end of my videos. I want people to know that there's good stuff out there.
Yeah. That's the big thing. We're here.
We didn't learn it from ourselves. We didn't make it up. Like, we made up the forms, but we didn't make up martial arts. Human beings made it up from their monkey selves, and that's what we're here to do.
Right. Find us on sabermartialarts.life. Get a hold of us, any of us. There's a bunch of instructors from a bunch of different parts of the United States there, and hopefully the world,
Become an affiliate.
after
It's not
Memorial
hard.
Day.
And just selfishly, we like having you. So
Yeah, and remember, bring your own saber.
bring your own saber.
This party's over.